This is the Context Podcast. Context Magazine is a publication of the American Sociological Association.
In this episode, I talk with two authors of Beyond Bullying from the new issue of Contexts. The piece is written by Jessica Fields, Laura Mamo, Jen Gilbert, and Nancy Lesko. Today, I speak with Jessica Fields and Laura Mamo, both of San Francisco State University, respectively in sociology and sexuality studies and health education. The team and the Beyond Bullying Project can be followed at beyondbullyingproject.com, on Facebook at facebook.com/beyondbullyingproject, and on Twitter at bbproject2014. Let's get started. So today I'm speaking with Laura Mamo and Jessica Fields, who are authors of a new piece in Context called Beyond Bullying, and which comes out in the upcoming fall issue under the pedagogy section. So Jessica and Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And so this piece opens with a description of a storytelling booth that you set up at a few high schools. So can we begin by having you just describe what the storytelling booth is?
Absolutely. The storytelling booth is part of a project called the Beyond Bullying Project that we implemented in schools. And just to describe it, it's a 6 by 3 foot enclosed booth that has a door and has been padded for soundproof. And there's a simple camera and audio recording inside the booth. And when people enter, they close the door behind them and can tell a story inside.
And, I mean, this is a unique approach to collecting data or collecting stories. So what prompted this project and this approach?
Well, I think that the team, which includes Laura and me, as well as Jen Gilbert at York University and Nancy Lesko at Teachers College, Columbia University, I think the four of us shared an impatience with the existing discourse around bullying. We were interested and pleased to see that people were invested in interrupting violence against lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, queer people in schools. But we were worried that what was increasingly happening was that schools were becoming comfortable thinking about LGBTQ sexuality within the context of bullying and not in other contexts. And we had a sense that other stories might be circulating in the schools. And we set up the booth to give people a chance to tell those stories.
So when you're approaching a school with a project like this, are there any obstacles that you faced in putting in a storytelling booth in a school setting?
There are actually fewer obstacles than we had expected and than one might expect. Probably the biggest obstacle was around IRB concerns. And it was less of an obstacle than more of a process of working out with schools and with school districts, thinking about how to engage youth in research, and especially youth in research that included both video and the topic of sexuality. We also found that schools had a protective stance towards students, and this stance was also part of the bullying framework. So we needed to work with schools to kind of think through and sort of push through that stance to get the research underway.
But I think once we were able to do that, we really found that teachers and students and staff were eager to think more creatively about LGBTQ sexuality. And they were excited by the possibilities that the booth represented. For some of the schools, I think it was a sign that they were in the position to be leaders in conversations around LGBTQ sexuality, and they welcomed the chance to demonstrate that leadership.
So once you're in and you start collecting these stories, you know, what did you learn? And going back to your earlier point, in what ways does this kind of change the way we might think about the broad discourse about bullying and how that kind of obscures parts of student identities?
I mean, I think that there were lots of different kinds of stories that we heard. And one of the pictures that emerges is that there is violence in schools. We have, and I use violence as a broad term here, there's physical violence, but there's also verbal harassment and teasing and then just sort of ordinary aggressions that occur in the context of schooling that many youth are contending with. It's just part of what it means to be in the institution of the school. We found that sometimes there were homophobic teachers or students. There were ways that the school curriculum or the pedagogy of the teachers didn't acknowledge LGBTQ sexuality. And that was definitely part of the story that we heard in the booth. It's not the whole picture, though.
So the picture of LGBT sexuality that emerged, I mean, the first thing we found is that LGBT stories of sexuality are very diverse and are part of school life. And that once we invited students to tell stories, we found that the usual narrative that casts LGBTQ sexuality as a site of risk and a site of victimization could quite quickly be disrupted once we invited other stories.
Once you began collecting these stories, what were sort of the big themes, or what did you learn from this?
I think that the first thing we want to do is notice the story that usually emerges in conversations about students' LGBTQ sexuality and identities and schooling. And the picture that usually emerges is that we have violence being cast by young people against other young people. And what we lose sight of is the institutional violence of schooling, that we don't, if we're only paying attention to bullying, to young people harassing other young people, we don't also notice the ways in which the everyday structures of schooling participate in this obscuring of LGBTQ sexuality and identities. We end up focusing on homophobia in individual people, teachers or students, often straight or closeted, being cast as the perpetrators of the bullying. And we don't notice the way that these everyday violences and ordinary experiences of sexuality, including LGBTQ sexuality, circulate through the school. And the storytelling booth really allowed us to get that picture, that bigger picture. So we hear stories of friendship. We hear stories of teachers who disappoint, but also teachers who support their students. We hear stories of teacher sexuality, so that we see that the vulnerability isn't only that of youth, but also of adults who are making their way through a workday in an institution that isn't always hospitable to LGBTQ sexuality. And Laura, would you like to add to that?
Well, I think that we also often hear stories where LGBTQ sexuality is just part of a youth's identity, and we're not able to hear stories about the other people that include teachers, but also outside of schools, family members and friends and their sort of extended family lives that include LGBTQ people. And in the booth, we found that students and faculty really told stories of their interactions within and beyond schools that included grandparents and parents and friends, as well as family members.
And did you want to add anything on either giving a specific example, maybe to illustrate this, of a story that has stuck out to you, or anything else on, you know, more broadly about the sort of obscuring of student identities that you saw?
So we heard a story from a teacher who really talked about what it meant for him to be out to students in different school contexts. He'd been a teacher in different states and in different school environments, and he found that being out and identifying as a gay man really took different contours depending on the school environment and students that he was working with. And he told us this story where he was quite startled by having to be in, but not necessarily closeted, but to be negotiating his sexuality in a way that he could relate to and connect with students and connect around the pedagogy. And it created some sadness for him, but also he realized it created an opening for engagement with students that over time really enabled conversations with students that he wasn't anticipating that he could have.
And then I can share a story of a student. I mean, in each of the three schools, we arrived with this large wooden box with a camera and lighting inside, and students and teachers would decorate this box to signal to the school community that they were welcome to enter it and tell LGBT stories of LGBTQ sexuality. And that means that the box became this in many places, enormous rainbow-colored feather boas, flickering lights, all sorts of fabulousness on the outside of the booth. And for some students, that meant that they took a really wide path so that they could avoid the booth. But because I didn't want to be connected with the queerness that seemed to signal. But for other students, it became something to gravitate toward, and they would go inside and tell multiple stories over the course of the 2 weeks we were in the school. And I'm thinking of one student in the Central High School, these are all pseudonyms, who talked about the value of the booth for him in the school and how the opportunity to tell stories within the space of the school helped him to get a sense of himself as a queer young man inside this public high school, navigating relationships with students and with classmates, and talked about how new conversations were coming up for him outside of the booth because of the things he was talking about in his class. Classmates were talking about inside the booth. So the walls of the booth started to become permeable as people had these private experiences in front of the camera and then carried them outside the school and interacted with others who'd had a similar experience.
You know, in the piece you speak of a more meaningful recognition. So, you know, what can educators and administrators do to achieve that kind of meaningful recognition?
Well, one thing that we have found and are exploring with is that it really, the project itself has allowed students and teachers to gather in the name of LGBT sexuality. And those gatherings are often take the form that's different than the usual pedagogy. So, for example, while we've been in the schools, we've hosted pizza parties and events where we are sharing stories from other students in other school settings, and allowing the students and teachers to engage in conversation around LGBT sexuality in really new ways.
I think, you know, we also hope that as students and teachers look out at the classroom or the lunchroom or the hallway, that they can start to imagine that these stories are circulating in those classrooms and school spaces, that the story of LGBTQ sexuality in the school is not one of being bullied or not being bullied, or of bullying someone or not bullying, but that it involves our friendships and our families, the complicated feelings that we have about sexuality, our own and others, and that those complicated feelings aren't always a sign that someone needs to intervene and fix the problem, that it's not always about risk and vulnerability alone, but also a story about how people are trying to find connections with one another. And one of the things I found most moving was that so many young people told stories about their friends coming out to them, and then for a moment, failing to be a good friend to that person, worrying that because the friend revealed that she was a lesbian or that he was gay, that it meant that others would think that they were gay, right? If they have a gay friend, and then they too must be gay. And so they distanced themselves from their friend for a while, but they wanted to find a way back into that friendship. And so the young people themselves were doing the work of handling those risks and vulnerability without the intervention of adults. And maybe what one thing to take from this is that intervention and support are different things, right? That we might support young people in these struggles without having always the need to intervene.
Thinking about this from, you know, the viewpoint of methodology or of sociology, you know, I'd be interested in hearing some of the broader lessons that you have both learned from this type of approach, with some attention towards, you know, what are the values of storytelling and sociological research, and how did this approach really, really help you land the kind of answers to the questions you were seeking?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, and it's something that we've been talking about a lot. In some ways, it was fairly new for us to offer such a minimal prompt, especially as people entered the booth. We really began by saying, to tell us any story about LGBTQ sexuality, and we resisted any kind of direction. And I think that methodologically for us, we really wanted to give storytellers, youth and adults alike, the control over really what they were going to share. And we wanted to methodologically think about stories as knowledge and valuing knowledge from multiple perspectives, and that comes in multiple form. And we're still really thinking methodologically about how to analyze stories in their whole and in part, that continues to sort of leave that sort of control over the theme and form and just vibrancy of any one story.
And then, you know, maybe not surprising, even though we relinquished some of the immediate control over the storytelling, themes and tropes structure those stories. And the existing structures that help to give shape up to our stories about sexuality became apparent. So relinquishing control doesn't mean that the stories just, that we lost control, right? The world we live in, the ways that we think about sexuality are still in play. And we, by stepping back, in some ways, the existing structures became more apparent to us. Another methodological strength of the study is that we collected stories inside the schools. We also conducted participant observation and interviews while we were there. So we're able to hear the stories that people offered inside the booth. We're also able, through the field notes, to document what was happening outside the booth, so we can see how people cut a wide path around the booth or spent time in its vicinity. And then we also conducted interviews with storytellers and leaders in the school so that we could hear more about their understanding of their experience of being inside the booth and then of hosting the booth. And what that means is that we're able to trace people across these different data sources, so we can see where they show up in our field notes and the stories that they told and how they reflected in the interviews. And we get this really textured picture of what a person's experience of Beyond Bullying was across these different venues, these different sources.
I think just to add one thing to that, the field notes and observations, which we did from 7 a.m. to almost 6 p.m. on for the weeks that we were at the school, really allowed us to look at the absences as well as what was present. So we wanted to answer what happens when you welcome stories in schools, and what does it take for teachers and administrators and students to welcome and allow conversations to happen. But part of that is also paying attention to the resistances and the silences and the challenges of doing so. And the participant observation really allowed us to really, through thick description, pay attention to the ways in which people didn't approach the booth and people didn't want to be interviewed, perhaps at first, but over time, toward our second week of engagement there, as perhaps trust emerged or perhaps they were more just curious about engaging with us, then they would want to be interviewed. So we really tried to pay attention to the sort of emotional atmosphere of the 2 weeks and what was developing both in present and silences. And I think the methodology of these three data sources allowed us to do so in pretty exciting ways.
And what's your take on being asked to be in the pedagogy section of Context Magazine as opposed to a regular feature?
What I like about landing in the pedagogy section of Context is that it recognizes that we were doing pedagogical work through this project, and that being in the school meant that we were participating in the schooling of adults and youth, in this case, inside the school, around LGBTQ sexuality. And I'm really interested in the idea that the research that we do is also tied to a pedagogical project around the topics that we take up in our studies. So I appreciate being placed there, and I'm interested to see what readers would make of that.
I think that you're right to note that, and it's also something that the funder of this project, the Ford Foundation, has sort of set forward in the original call that we responded to, which is to really think about sort of three pillars, if you will, of the project, one being sort of a research pillar, but one being a multimedia, they call it communications project, and also an engaging with youth and also with the communities that we're working with in sort of a training program. So it's, we've from the beginning been thinking about the ways that Beyond Bullying is at once research, at once training, and at once broadening a conversation that will be ongoing beyond the time of our project.
Excellent. Well, this has been really, really interesting insight into the piece. So thank you so much for doing the podcast with me today.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Sarah.